Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, August 28th, 2017, and the Green Bay Packers have recently completed their third exhibition game of this training camp season. They were in Denver, Colorado, Saturday night to take on the Denver Broncos. They ended up losing that game 20-17. Not that the score really matters. And so now we are entering the final week of training camp. The Packers have one more public practice on Tuesday. I believe it's at 11:45 a.m. They have one more exhibition game against the Los Angeles Rams here at Lambeau Field. And then they have the lengthy process of cutting down from 90 players to 53 players and then signing an additional 10 to their practice squad. So you put all that together, and by this time next week, Monday morning, it'll be the official start of the regular season, if you will. The Packers will be preparing for their season opener against the Seattle Seahawks, and the long, 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 long grind that is training camp will finally be over. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. Thank you very much for sticking with me for the last month, essentially. Like I said, we are now into the final week, which means the final week of daily podcasts. We'll have one Monday, today, obviously, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then after that, I'm not really sure what we're going to do around cut day. That is a really, really busy time, so there's a chance we might do one over the weekend just to talk about the roster, but I'll figure that out later in the week and let you guys know. And then after that, as I've mentioned before, we're going to go to three times a week during the regular season. Definitely the Friday before every weekend, definitely the Monday or day after every game, and then one other day in the middle, and that might fluctuate a little from week to week. But bookended Monday and Friday in a traditional week, you'll have podcasts for sure, with one additional squeezed somewhere in the middle. So let's talk about this game. And first, we can talk about some of the injuries, and that will lead us into the news of the day, if you will. So first, let's talk about Nick Perry. You know, that's a huge name for the Packers this season. Just signed him to a really big, really expensive contract extension. And this is a guy that now, all of a sudden, is hurt. And this is the knock on him. This is sort of the bane of his existence as a professional football player. Nick Perry cannot seem to stay healthy. And even last year, the best year of his career, he had to battle through essentially the last month or two wearing a club to protect a broken hand. So, I mean, this is a guy that just has rotten luck when it comes to injuries. And wouldn't you know it, against Denver in the first quarter, he drops out of the game with an ankle injury. Now, we don't know the severity of that injury. Based on his demeanor on the sidelines, it doesn't seem like it's anything serious because he was laughing, joking around with teammates. But hey, I mean, there's been guys out there that have had significant injuries and they don't even realize it because these guys are so used to pushing through pain and just, you know, playing despite any minor ailments or what they believe to be minor ailments. So that, of course, is something we definitely need to keep an eye on over the next few days, because we've talked at length on this podcast about the real thinness that the Packers have at that outside linebacker position. And there was essentially two guys that they could count on. One was Perry, one was Clay Matthews. And as of right now, at least one of those guys is a little up in the air due to an ankle injury. So that brings us to the news of the day. On Sunday, the Packers brought in former San Francisco 49ers outside linebacker Ahmad Brooks and worked him out. At the time I'm recording this podcast, I'm not sure if they're going to sign him or if they just worked him out and decided it wasn't for them. But what we know right now is that Brooks was in Green Bay, worked out for the Packers, and I think that's a pretty good acknowledgement of some of the same issues that Tom and I have discussed day after day on this particular program, and that is a complete lack of depth at the outside linebacker position. I think there's two things that probably play into the decision to bring in Brooks for a workout. First, you have the health. So, of course, Perry, as I mentioned, is up in the air right now with that ankle problem. But then you also had Jayrone Elliott, another outside linebacker, drop out of the game Saturday with tightness in his back. And this, I think, is a little bit of a concerning problem for him, because Elliott also dropped out of both practices, both public practices, I should say, with the same back spasms that ultimately, you know, sidelined him in Denver. So what that means is he tried to practice the first day last week and couldn't make it through practice. He was back on the field for the second day and couldn't make it through practice. And then he tried to play in the game and couldn't make it through the game. Now, back pain is one of the things that I'm sure plenty of you guys can relate to when it comes to football players. Of course, probably not injured in the same manner, but the type of pain, the way it bothers you, the way it prohibits you from moving certain things and doing certain activities in your day-to-day life, I'm sure many of you can relate to that. So as you know, these things can be fickle, they can be annoying, they can be slow healing, and so I think the Packers need to take extreme caution with Elliott this week because he needs to be ready for that season opener, not only just from scrimmage as their number three outside linebacker, but this guy is one of their three or four best special teams players. He's been that for his whole career here, ever since he made the 53-man roster as an undrafted player out of Toledo. He's a guy that's big, strong, fast, athletic, and gives them a real presence on special teams that they don't really have at that particular body type. There's another injury component to this. I know it seems like injuries are just racking up already, but honestly, that's really kind of what's happening. And so the other piece of this is rookie outside linebacker Vince Beagle. Beagle, of course, the former Wisconsin player, fourth round pick this year, has not been healthy since rookie minicamp when he injured his foot and needed foot surgery. We're now into the final week of camp, and we don't know if Beagle will practice this week or if he's still going to remain on PUP. If he starts the season on the PUP list, he misses at least the first six games, and after that, he can come back, you know, whenever he's ready up until a certain point. I forget what that point is, but eventually, I think you get placed on injured reserve, and so that would, you know, end the season anyway. But yeah, if he starts the year on PUP, he misses the first six games guaranteed. And so this is a real tough one, I think, for the Packers if Beagle's not ready to go, you know, today or tomorrow when they get on the practice field, because they have a lot of talent at a lot of other positions. You look at running back, three draft picks invested there. You look at wide receiver, probably eight or nine guys that are worthy of making the 53-man roster. You look at cornerback, six guys at least. You look at safety, five guys. And so what I'm getting at is the Packers need to squeeze positions anywhere they can when Ted Thompson makes this 53-man roster cut later this week. And so the Beagle situation is a really tough one because your pass rush is struggling. There is no doubt about it. But Beagle is unproven. I mean, the guy has been through not even two full practices as a Packer. So they don't know what he's going to give them. They don't know if he's going to be able to contribute as a rookie in terms of pass rush off the edge, pressuring the quarterback, forcing fumbles, stopping the run. They don't even know if he's stout enough to stop the run at this level. And then you add in the special teams component. His speed and his athleticism and his body type would lead you to believe that he should be a good special teams player because he has a lot of the same traits that Jaron Elliott has. But again, totally unproven. So the question for Ted Thompson becomes, do you activate this guy even if he's not all the way ready to play, you know, week one, week two? And do you activate him simply because you're so thin at that position that you just need him no matter what? No matter if he's, you know, only 90% or doesn't know the defense all that well, do you just need this guy? The flip side of that is, do you really want to activate a guy that might not be able to contribute for a couple weeks because he's been off for so long and cost yourself a roster spot that could definitely be used at a deeper position? So this is a quandary, I think. You know, I can see it both ways. Going into the final exhibition game against the Rams, I kind of thought that he would be here by now. I shouldn't say that. I definitely thought he would be on the field by now, especially based on the way he talks about his injury, saying that he feels great and that, you know, he's ahead of schedule and all this stuff. And so it just, you know, something doesn't seem to add up there. But what I was getting at is I thought he would be here by now. And even if he practices tomorrow, which is the last public practice for the Packers, as I mentioned, even if he practices tomorrow, can you really put him on the field with 2 days of practice after not having practiced since May? No, you can't. I would be shocked if they did that. He would essentially have one normal practice tomorrow, and then he'd have their walkthrough practice on Wednesday, and that's it. They'd have to throw him out on the field because this is a short week. The game's Thursday night. I don't think you do that. I don't think it's fair to the player, and I don't think it's safe for the player, especially one coming off surgery. So then you have to ask yourself, okay, if we want him on the roster, you know, when is he going to be ready to contribute? Is he going to be ready in 10 or 12 days to play Seattle? Is he going to be ready in 19 or 20 days to play Atlanta? And so it becomes a matter of how long can you have a guy on your roster that's not ready to contribute when you have a lot of talent at other positions? That's a really tough question, and one that I'm not sure Ted Thompson even knows the answer to yet. It might come down to the very last day and the very last medical report for Beagle. So that's definitely going to be really interesting to see how this week plays out at that position. And then, of course, you have the Brooks factor, circling back to the beginning of this conversation. If they sign Brooks, it gives you a 33-year-old who's certainly on the tail end of his career, but a guy that formerly made the second-team All-Pro or AP All-Pro Associated Press twice in back-to-back years. He made the Pro Bowl once in 2013. He's third all-time in the 49ers franchise history in sacks with 51.5, I believe it is. And dating back to like 2008 or 2009, he's had at least 5 sacks every season, peaking in that 2013 year when he made the Pro Bowl. That's when he had 8.5 sacks, which was his career high. So what does he give you? Well, he gives you experience. He gives you leadership, probably, not immediately, but a guy that can add an additional mentor to these young players like Fackrell, like Elliott, like Beagle, like Reggie Gilbert, if he makes the roster. And he can definitely give you a guy that knows the tricks of the trade and is savvy enough to probably get 3 or 4 or 5 sacks, even in a year where he's not totally productive. Is that worth it? I don't know. I don't know what it looked like when he went through the physical. I don't know what it looked like when he was out there working out for the Packers. And again, you got to remember, this is a guy that was cut by the San Francisco 49ers, a team that he had been with, you know, since 2008, I believe it was. Excuse me, 2008. So a guy essentially that was a mainstay of that organization was cast aside. Was he cast aside because he can't play anymore? I don't know. But the 49ers made it pretty clear that he is not part of their 53-man roster, and the reason they released him now rather than, you know, at the end of the week was so that he could find another place to play because they believe he can contribute somewhere else. Now, they did save a significant amount of cap space by getting rid of him. A $6.1 million cap hit comes off the books, which is not an insignificant number. And so that's something to keep in mind as well. But that's where we're at with the outside linebacker position. One of the two guys that you had to count on is now at least banged up. The guys behind him aren't producing. They're looking at a 33-year-old off the street, and we don't know when Vince Beagle is coming back. So that right there is a pretty bleak outlook for a position that goes a long, long way toward determining whether or not teams can win the Super Bowl. All right, what else came out of this game? Well, I was pretty impressed by the performance of Brett Hundley. I thought that this was a really, really good test for him against a quality defense. He got a ton of playing time. Rodgers played the first two series of the game, and then Hundley finished the entire game. Joe Callahan and Taysom Hill didn't even play, which I was very surprised at. I thought for sure that even if they wanted to give Hundley more time, you know, half the first quarter, the whole second quarter, the whole third quarter, I thought at least Callahan and Hill would split the fourth. And so I was very taken aback by that. But he played the whole game, and I thought he had a very strong performance. He finished 20 of 30 for 186 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, but he did have a rushing touchdown, and he finished with 5 rushing attempts for 14 yards. I thought he was composed. I thought that he cut down on the number of really questionable throws. There were still at least 2 that I can think of where he throws it into traffic and kind of makes mistakes. One of those was actually on the last drive of the game when they were trying to win it, and he flung one up the seam to Colby Pearson, the wide receiver, and it just sailed way over his head, and it was intercepted, but the Broncos had lined up a touch offside, and so that wiped out the interception. There was another questionable throw that was nearly picked off. It was a throw, sort of a short throw into the left flat. It might have been toward Trevor Davis, maybe. And it was undercut by one of the defensive backs for the Broncos, a near interception there. But the bottom line is that Hundley looks in command of the offense at this point. I think that even in this training camp alone, if you look at the way he played against Philadelphia and then you look at the way he played now, what is that, 2.5 weeks later, I think it's night and day. I think that he has made significant strides in the last 3 weeks alone, and I think that probably has a lot to do with shaking off the rust of not really playing in a game in essentially 2 years or close to 2 years. And so I think he's given the Packers a lot of confidence now that they have a backup quarterback to rely on behind Aaron Rodgers. I think that it was a huge game for Hundley in terms of showing that he can still be successful behind a very, very, very questionable offensive line. Hundley has been playing with this second-string offensive line for the majority of training camp. And from left to right, it's Jason Spriggs at left tackle, Kofi Amici at left guard, Lucas Patrick at center, Justin McCray at right guard, and then Kyle Murphy at right tackle. To put it simply, all of those guys have had questionable or poor training camps. I mean, we've talked a lot about Jason Spriggs, and this past game was not any better. Gave up at least 2 sacks, was involved in some other pressures, got flattened by a defensive tackle that just put him on his backside, and, you know, it just was not a pretty day. Now, one of those sacks was given up to Von Miller, who, of course, is arguably the best pass rusher in the entire league. I think it's hard to fault Spriggs for that. But the bottom line is, we're now 3 weeks into the game portion of training camp, and I really don't see much of a reduction in terms of his negative plays. Don't get me wrong, there's plays where he actually does really well. And he had one play early on where he stonewalled Von Miller, and it was great. It was awesome. It was a really nice play. And then, of course, he has 4 or 5 plays in a game where you just think to yourself, holy cow, I mean, what in the world is going on? And in addition to those sacks that he gave up, you know, he was also called for a holding penalty that was one of the ugliest plays I've ever seen. I mean, it was just, he got beat so badly that he was turned around backwards. So in other words, he was facing the quarterback, and the guy he was supposed to block was by him, and he reached out with one hand and tried to, like, grab the guy by the waist or pull him down by the belt or the jersey or something. And it was just a really, really sad-looking penalty. And so this is a disappointing camp for Spriggs for sure. Kofi Amici, the rookie 6th-round pick from South Florida, I think he's just too raw, too inexperienced, too raw, too much development, and he's had a difficult time. He's been manhandled a lot, especially at that left guard position. You move to center and you look at Lucas Patrick, well, more injury concerns. Lucas Patrick dropped out of the game and was being evaluated for a concussion. Really interesting, this scenario, because on the play that he dropped out, there was no helmet-to-helmet contact. He didn't fall to the ground. Nobody hit him. It was a very, very light block to the point where both he and the guy he was blocking were not really involved in the play. So neither guy hit each other really hard. They just sort of engaged and then moved laterally along the line of scrimmage. And Patrick was fine. They disengaged. He took a few steps. And then all of a sudden he was down on his knee and looked really, really woozy. Now, I think that he played a good number of snaps with a concussion. And the reason I say that is because about 2 drives earlier, I think it was, I don't know the exact number of plays, he was down near the red zone, and he got bowled over at the line of scrimmage. And that's not what I think gave him the concussion. So he got bowled over, and he's on his back, you know, like if you picture a dog laying on its back with its paws up in the air. He had just fallen back, so that momentum caused all 4 of his limbs to go up in the air. And as he's trying to get back up, the same guy that knocked him down unintentionally put his knee into Patrick's helmet. So he took a knee to the helmet, and he got up fine, and he played the next snap, and everything was cool. But I didn't see anything between that knee to the helmet and this play where it looked totally benign, and all of a sudden he's on the ground. I didn't see anything in there. And so I wonder if he actually got the concussion or got woozy or whatever the case may be on that knee to the helmet. And then he played a little bit longer, and then he started to realize, whoa, I'm dizzy, this isn't normal. And then he gets evaluated for a concussion. But you could see as he's walking off the field, he's got one arm around each trainer. He looks totally woozy and out of it. And, you know, that's just another situation that the Packers have to worry about. Move to right guard, Justin McCray. This is a guy that I think played really, really well, much better than anticipated the first two and a half weeks of camp. I think the last 2 weeks he's come down to earth a little bit. This is a guy that played most recently in the Arena League and, you know, has been out of the NFL for a long time prior to joining the Packers. I think that he's a guy that, in theory, gives you three-position versatility, left guard, center, and right guard. Right now, he's the number, well, I guess technically he's the number two center now because Don Barclay is still out with the ankle injury. Lucas Patrick obviously dropped out of the game. And so McCray goes from fourth-string center to second-string center, which is crazy to think about. But he started to struggle. You know, I think that he's been beaten at times in pass protection. I think he's starting to have trouble with guys that are a little bit more experienced than him when he plays in the earlier portions of the game. But the guy has a nastiness to him, as Tom Silverstein said. He's not afraid to mix it up. He's not afraid to throw his body in there. And the Packers like him on special teams. He's still, I believe, on number one kick return as one of the two big guys leading the wedge back there. In front of Jeff Janis. So he's not out of it by any means, but I just think he's regressed a little bit in the last couple weeks after starting training camp really, really well and catching some people by surprise. A couple other things that impressed me from the game. I'll go through these rather quickly since we've already crossed the 20-minute mark. But Demaryius Randle, I think that for a guy that was criticized as heavily as he was last season and into the offseason, myself included, I think he played really, really well. And I think he showed a lot of the traits that people were questioning last year as he was coming back from the groin injury. I thought he tackled extremely well. He had five tackles in the first half alone. I don't think he actually played into the second half. So he had five tackles in the first half. He made a really physical play out on the boundary where he was going against a big 6'5 wide receiver, kind of like a Lance Kendricks type body, you know, that's traditionally bigger than the position. And he just flattened the guy on a quick pass out to the flat. There was another play where he wrapped up in space around the sideline. In the run game, he wasn't afraid to stick his nose in there, and he was joining into piles. And so I think that was a big step in the right direction for Randle. And I think he also had a decent day in coverage. So definitely a good step for him after a lot of the criticism that he's absorbed about his toughness, about his willingness to tackle, and just about, you know, his physical approach to the game. We saw a little bit more of the running backs, the three rookies. I know that's something Tom and I had talked about, how this late into camp, we still feel that we don't really know a lot about these guys. So I'll run through the numbers real quick. Aaron Jones was the leading rusher with six carries for 43 yards. His best play was a 28-yard run, which he broke out through the right side, I believe it was, and up the sideline. Looked really, really good on that particular play. But if you take that out, you know, he's down to, what, five carries for 15 yards. So you're talking about 3 yards a pop. Not ideal. Ty Montgomery, same situation. He carried three times for 31 yards, but 25 of those came on one run in the first quarter. Tremendous run. He broke through the line of scrimmage and was just dragging people for about 7 or 8 extra yards, including Aqib Talib, the stellar corner for the Broncos. 25-yard run, he got up, he was screaming and yelling, he was fired up. That's exactly what the Packers want to see out of him, but he needs to do it on a more consistent basis. You take away his big run, and he had 2 carries for 6 yards. Not ideal. One of those was a touchdown in which he demonstrated good toughness and good intelligence to stretch the ball out with his right hand. But I still think it's a guy that I haven't seen him take more than 10, 12 carries in a game, and that's really what I want to know. Can he do that going into the regular season? Next, we talk about Devontae Mays. Again, 5 carries for 12 yards, 2.4 a carry. Not great. Jamal Williams, 3 carries for 4 yards, 1.3 a carry. Very, very poor. The positive news for Williams came in the receiving game. He had 3 catches for 46 yards, and he was a real threat after he caught the ball on plays where Brett Hundley looked for him as a check down. He found open space. He turned upfield. He made nice plays. I thought he looked good in the open field. So that was nice to see from Williams. And I also thought the Packers got their screen game going a little bit better. I know I talked about that, I think, on the podcast, but I definitely wrote a story about it after the first game against the Eagles, sort of discussing how the screens had been a huge weapon for them over the last couple of years with James Starks. But when they started using them against Philadelphia, they completely went awry and haywire and didn't look very good. And so I asked Lane Taylor about it, and he said that, you know, that's a play you really have to screw up a couple times in games before you recognize the things you need to do correctly. And sure enough, you know, 2.5 weeks later, the screen game is starting to look, you know, much, much better. I thought that Trevor Davis had another nice punt return. He broke down the right sideline for 27 yards. So this is a guy that's really starting to show now. When he holds on to the ball, he is a dangerous, dangerous weapon on the punt return. And that is why the Packers keep putting him back there instead of Randall Cobb. On the defensive side of the ball, Kentrell Bryce had a really nice play out in center field. There was an overthrown ball by Trevor Siemian, the starting quarterback for the Broncos. Bryce read it really well, made an easy basket catch, took off down the left sideline, and showed a lot of athleticism, cutting back across the middle of the field and sprinting toward the goal line, ultimately getting tackled at the 2-yard line to set up that touchdown run by Montgomery that I mentioned a minute ago. Another player that I thought played really, really well, Brian Price. This is a guy that I said was in a roster battle with Christian Ringo for maybe the last spot along that defensive line. I thought Price did a ton to help his stock. Not only did he play well against the run, he had 2 forced fumbles and 1 fumble recovered. I think that, you know, this was just such a strong performance from him. He showed an alertness to extend one of his arms when he wasn't even really near the ball carrier. He wasn't involved in the tackle at all, and he just saw the guy, stuck out an arm, poked the ball free. Then, after he poked the ball free, he was like 4 yards away, spun around, sprinted back, and dove to get back on top of the ball and recover it. I just thought he had a tremendous game. And at this point, I'd be a little surprised if he doesn't make the 53-man roster with the way that he's playing. So kudos to Price for really stepping forward and taking that position a little bit by the horns with just a very strong game, in my opinion. In terms of other players on the defense, I'm looking through the stats here. You know, Kyler Fackrell stood out to me again in a negative way. We have now seen 3 exhibition games, and Kyler Fackrell has 1 tackle. 1 tackle in 3 games, and he's played a lot of snaps. And not only does he just have 1 tackle, that tackle was not a sack, and it was not a tackle for loss. This is a guy that just is not able to influence games right now in a significant way. Can he turn it on in the regular season? I guess so. I mean, he turned it on in the regular season last year, but this has to be a significant cause for concern for general manager Ted Thompson. 3 games and 1 tackle for a guy that was your 3rd-round pick a year ago and a guy that you think can add something significant off the edge. Now, that said, he did have a terrific play on special teams where he made a really strong tackle on the very first punt of the game. And that right there reflects the value similar to Jeff Janis. He may not be contributing from scrimmage right now, but he is an extremely talented special teams player. So that could be his path to the roster. Last guy I want to mention is Mike Daniels. Not a lot needs to be said about him. He's probably the Packers' best defensive player, and if he's not, he's in the top 2, maybe along with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. I thought Daniels looked terrific. I thought he was active from the very beginning, just feisty, nasty, growling. He bowled over offensive linemen. He had a 10-yard sack. He was vicious in the running game. That's the type of Mike Daniels that the Packers need. He didn't have a poor season last year, but it wasn't as good as his season 2 years ago. And so if he can get back to that level he was playing at in 2015, that'll be huge for the Packers, this season, because they need to be able to stop the run in order to play some of that nitro defense that they've really flashed a lot of. And that is subbing out a traditional inside linebacker and adding an extra safety, whether it's Morgan Burnett or Josh Jones, they need to be able to stop the run in that package if it's going to succeed. And if Mike Daniels plays like an animal and Kenny Clark plays like an animal and Nick Perry is healthy and they can get some production from Blake Martinez, who had another solid game, then you can play more of that nitro package because you have some other players to stop the run. So very positive performance from Mike Daniels and the defensive line in general. I thought it was a pretty good game up until maybe the starters dropped out and then you started to see some decline. Overall, not a bad performance from the Packers. Some of their key players really took steps in the right direction, as I mentioned. I thought Hundley looked good. I thought Jamal Williams as a receiver looked really good. Demarius Randall looked really good, just running back through the guys I've mentioned here. So those guys certainly took steps in the right direction, and that could be the end of their exhibition season. You know, this game against the Rams is going to be all backups, essentially. And so, you know, just off the top of my head, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers, it wouldn't surprise me if all of those guys don't play. It wouldn't surprise me if all of the starting offensive linemen don't play. Mike Daniels, Clinton Dix, Morgan Burnett, it wouldn't surprise me if those guys don't play. Even Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins, they might take those guys out and throw some of the younger players in there just for the sake of getting more reps. So in other words, if you're going to the game Thursday or if you're going to watch it, don't expect to see a lot of the starters. It's going to be tons of backups. It's going to be some sloppy football, and it's going to be a lot of guys competing for those final few spots on the roster. We haven't gotten the media schedule yet from the Packers to see what's going on tomorrow, but I believe Tom Silverstein will be back on the podcast. Can't say for sure, but I think that's the plan this week. And remember, this is a huge week of Packers coverage, so be sure to follow jsonline.com and packersnews.com for all kinds of stuff as we get through the final exhibition game, and then Cut Day on Saturday is arguably our busiest day of the year. Tom will have his live blog going all day long for like 10 hours, and you know, Ryan, Tom, myself, Pete, we'll all be working the phones trying to get you the latest information on cuts and roster moves and all those types of things. So definitely, if you're going to tune in this week because it should be an exciting one. My name is Michael Cohen. This is the Packers Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.